coming straight from the underground.
Sports Hub Underground. This is Matt Dolliff. I am here with my co-star Ty Anderson, as we are every single week at 98.5 thesportshub.com, Sports Hub app. You can get us wherever you get your podcasts. Ty, hello.
What's up?
Hi, I'm catching you after your latest appearance on the Felger and Maz program.
Yeah.
No Felger, no Maz. It was the Murray guy, Joe and Jim Murray.
Yeah, the tag team.
I feel like, they're kind of like natural disasters, Twin Towers. X-Pac and Kane. No,
they're Authors of Pain, I think.
I'm saying
they're
like AOP. What's a
Paul
good,
Ellering?
Well, now you got me thinking. Like, what's a good tag team that was like just like a tall dude that could give you a big boot,
and then
like an absolute behemoth that'll beat you with like a Vader bomb or something?
Well,
Is there any team like that?
I mean, no, but Brothers of Destruction, because they're both named Murray. I mean, that just makes sense to me. But what do I know?
Wait, what?
Brothers of Destruction, Undertaker and Kane?
Oh, no, sorry. I misread what you said. I was like, what are you talking about? The Undertaker's name
rube.
Is Murray.
You bozo. You absolute dullard.
They are the Brothers of Destruction. Okay, no, I agree. I agree with that. Owen Hart and Yokozuna is a good one.
I think bozo is such a good insult. And I think rube is also a good one, too.
Bozo is a good one because it's not like... you couldn't go back and say, well, this was an offensive term back, because like something like an idiot or a moron was used for like people with like disabilities.
I know. I try to say those things now because of that. Yeah. I didn't know that for like the longest time.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I get it. It's old though. I mean, it's like, I feel like that's just so long gone, but like, I get it. But like bozo, you're just talking about Bozo the Clown, right? You're just a clown.
I believe so, unless there's another kind of bozo.
And I mean, like, what are we afraid of offending clowns? Like
I am one.
They're terrifying. We're a couple of clowns.
I dance on the internet for clown dollars.
I
get it.
We are a couple of clowns. Theoretically, we are billionaires.
You got me looking at making sure rube is not offensive.
Oh, rube. Yeah, I don't know what the origins of that, but rube, I think, is used for people from the South that are of low intelligence.
Dictionary has it as a country bumpkin.
Bumpkin. I don't know if that's bumpkin. That doesn't sound like that at a non-offensive origin.
Yeah. Now we're going to go an unsophisticated or socially awkward
person. This doesn't seem like
the
best time for us to be going over offensive terms. So I'm going to move on. You were on with the Twin Towers, Jim Murray and Joey. It had to be a nice change of pace, though, from Felger just screaming at you.
I like when Felger gets mad at me before he lets me finish my point. And I'm like, you're mad about something I haven't even said.
I know. Don't you love it when you hear like an interview where they're like just badger the person? And then, like, they get, like, frozen because they're like, I don't know what, are these guys going to kill me? I don't know what to say. And they try to get into their answer, and then they just cut them right up.
You know who I think's a bad interviewer? Howard Stern. If you listen, I think he can be. Like, I'll listen to some of the things that he does, and he'll ask someone a question and be like, did you think this? And they answer it. Before they can even finish sentence, he's like, no, but did, like, he's, like, trying to, like, corner them into something. And I'm like, like, let them finish their thought before you start doing this. Like,
he definitely does that. Most of my Howard Stern thoughts are based on when he was on BCN back in the 90s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, maybe he's different now. But I feel like he's always been good at just asking simple questions just to get, like, the emotional response out of someone. But
so,
I see what you're saying.
There's a couple of interviews that I think of that I've watched or listened to online that, like, that... I found myself going, Howard, let him answer the question. It was a Dave Grohl interview talking about Nirvana, and I wanted to like hear more about it, but he kept cutting Dave Grohl off, and I was like, dude, stop. And then I think there was an Adam Sandler interview talking about like the SNL days, and I was like, all right, I want to hear more from Sandler, not you trying to corner him into giving you the answer that you seek in this moment.
Yeah, it's funny how like he never really, I mean, I don't say never, but it's like rare that he had the person that blew up or like got up and left. That never happens. Maybe it was just because he was just like so highly rated that like I can't F up this opportunity.
Does he still have a show or is it like,
Stern? Yeah, he still is.
Daily? I don't know if it's reruns or not.
I don't know if it's daily. It might be like pre-recorded, that sort of thing. Okay. And it's hard to find. You got to be on satellite.
He's got
to
be old now, right?
He's old. He's in his 60s or early 70s maybe. So I don't know how much longer he's going to be yapping around.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, he was the biggest show in town for a while. It was,
speaking of Doc,
those days are over.
Doc canceled her Sirius XM that she had in her car.
Why is that?
Well, it went up, I think, another like $10, I think. And
God, per month?
I think so. And it used to be really good, but lately it's been kind of shitty. I've been noticing that. Like, they kind of got rid of a lot of stations. First of all, if you have Sirius XM, and people who are listening who have Sirius XM, they know what I'm talking about. They have a U2 specific channel that just plays U2. But U2 is on every other station, too. It's like, all right, guys, that's enough of the U2, please.
We could probably, I bet they're on ROR, like, as we speak.
Right. On New Year's Day, YouTube U2 is not a band that I particularly care for.
Well, we were talking, was it last week where you said you knew a surprising amount of 80s music, which I thought,
yes.
We never got, like, deep into it, but I didn't think that was anywhere near your music taste, like knowing any of those bands, let alone enjoying any of it.
So I listen to just about everything. The only thing I don't like is I don't really like country music because I just can't get into it. The vibes are off for me. But like when I go to the gym, there are some days I will have like an 80s like pop mix just going on because I'm like, I just need a break from my hardcore and my punk and my metal. Like I just need a break from that. And like when I was using the gym here a couple weeks ago, I was just cranking an old 80s playlist, and it was like Billy Idol and like Tears for Fears. I was like, this rules. I'm like, this is the best. I'm just lifting weights, listening to Tears for Fears. Like, who does this? But it was great in that moment. So
time after time, who did it?
Cyndi Lauper.
Damn it. Yeah. Thought I had you.
No,
I
love Cyndi Lauper.
The problem is I don't know a lot of like deep cuts when it comes to 80s, unless I did, you know, like Trapped Under Ice. Who did that song?
Trapped Under Ice? I think it was the that's Metallica, but all I think of is the band, Trapped Under Ice from Baltimore.
Oh, I didn't even know
that's
that
a
was
hardcore
a
band. Yeah,
yeah. But also, I was talking about the Metallica, so I forgot the Lightning.
I was like, oh, you want to talk about TUI? I'm like, you want to talk about some Baltimore hardcore? Let's do it.
Let's talk some TUI. All right, I'm gonna try for a second time to get into what you were talking about with Jim and Joe.
Oh no, I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about Trapped Under. Sorry, go on.
We can. I mean, whatever. We love going on tangents. That's the essence of podcasting, really.
I think so.
And
yeah.
Before, at the risk of going on another tangent, there are a bunch of podcasts I listen to where if like they went to like exclusively on Sirius, I would actually consider getting a Sirius subscription. But like, who would get that just for to listen to U2 all day? You get that for Howard Stern. Or like whoever else. I don't even know who else is on there.
I would get
it
for the variety, but I feel like even the variety is kind of going by the wayside of late. Like, there's just a lot of, like, there's a lot of artist-specific channels. Okay, so I think, off the top of my head, the artist-specific channels that I know of are U2, Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen, Pearl Jam, Dave Matthews Band. Now, what happens is that, and the Beatles, I believe, are one as well. What happens, though, is that you hear those artists on, like, the alternative channel and, like, the 90s and the 80s and the 70s channel. And I'm like, no. If you have a specific channel of all of that artist, keep that stuff on that channel. I get why they don't, right? Because some people probably have Sirius XM playing in, like, a shop, right? Like,
you want to put on just the classic rock station and you can't just have no Springsteen.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So I understand it from that point of view, but, like, I found that it's becoming a bit repetitive, right? Versus when she first got it and I was in her car, like, I would make her drive. I'd be like, yo, can we drive? Because I want to listen to Sirius XM because, like, they play a great variety. Now it's kind of like, this variety kind of stinks.
Right. Well, now you know, like, you can almost predict the songs.
Basically,
at that point, yeah.
Yeah, they love playing, like, if it's 90s, you're going to hear Ace of Base, like, every probably 45 minutes, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you get that on Terrestrial, too. But, you know, ROR's free, folks. Hop in your cart. They're on 105.7, sister station. Great, great 80s hits.
What year do you think Ace of Base's big hit dropped? Because it blew my mind. Because it gives you the year on some of these
Earlier than 1994, I would guess.
It's like 93, which is crazy. I thought it was like 96, 97.
I just know because I got into like real, quote unquote, real music at a relatively early age.
Yeah.
Like when a lot of kids were still listening to like kids music.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Nirvana and Green Day and that stuff.
That's kids music.
So I remember putting,
how you grow up.
Well, it's funny. Like I have a niece who's two and they like play all kinds of random stuff. And it makes you realize like what music just sounds good and is like well produced and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like they put on Unforgiven by Metallica and she loved it.
Oh.
She loved it. I mean, it's not like a heavy, hard sounding song, but it has a nice don't know. It has a nice melody to it.
My mom always,
that's one of the best produced albums of all time.
My mom always tells a story about when I was like two or three, I would sing Spoon Man by Soundgarden in the back seat. So same kind of vibes, I guess. Right?
I was the same except Black Hole Sun.
There you go.
Not that I knew at all what was going on. You know, I would just flip on MTV and watch the video countdowns and stuff, right? That's where I saw Ace of Base with the... They had two hits with like the same exact beat.
Yeah.
I saw the sign and then I don't know if... I think it's called Don't Turn Around or Don't Look Around.
All She Wants? All That?
All That... Maybe it's three songs with the same beat.
Yeah.
They all have the... Boom,
Well, the All That She Wants has like that like weird like whirring kind of echoey noise that sounds like... The sticks that woman twirls in the Power Rangers movie when she's fighting off the big birds. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't, but now I'm going to go listen to the song later, and I'm going to hear it, and I'll never unhear it.
Yeah. You don't know that scene I'm talking about, the Power Rangers movie? They're on an island with a bunch of big birds. Look at the Baltimore Ravens logo came to life.
I had just grown out of Power. Well, Power Rangers, I lasted like 1 year.
Yeah, okay. This guy's going to sit here and tell
me. I grew out of Power Rangers.
He's
going to
tell me he's not into Amy Jo Johnson in the 1990s.
I was into Power.
Piss off.
No, of course. But I was into Power Rangers in like 93, 94.
Yeah.
And then I watched wrestling for the first time, and that was it. I was off. It was all wrestling from there on out.
That was like the ending credits. Yeah, that Van Halen song with Sammy Hagar.
See, yeah, like I remember kids my age still being into Power Rangers. Like, what's wrong with you? And I'm the one sitting over here watching Yokozuna.
Right.
Drop his ass on a guy.
Yeah.
As if I'm not a real man and watch these guys in their underwear just rolling around.
Yeah.
Pretending to fight each other.
It's been very funny to watch like some of that stuff. It's funny. They're releasing a new wrestling video game. And I was like, damn, I would get this if I could play in like the old looking arena setup with like the red, white, and blue ropes. The, what was that, Ico Pro or whatever, like those ads. Like, can I get that Things arena to wrestle in? Because I'll buy the game if I can do that.
You can't? They don't have, like, create an arena?
I'm sure they do. But, yeah, I don't know if you follow AEW wrestler on Twitter, Eddie Kingston. He's always retweeting old wrestling. Typically, it's like old Japanese wrestling or, like, old Terry Funk, Mick Foley matches. But I just love watching those clips and then falling down the rabbit hole of like watching other old 90s clips. Like someone shared an old 1-2-3 Kid match on Twitter, and it was awesome. It was like early 1-2-3 Kid. It was like kind of stiff for what it was. I was like, oh, this is a great match. But it was in that kind
From
of
Japan?
Like
Japan?
No, it was in WWF. But it was like in like the arena that like we're talking about. Like it was like that kind of setup. So it was it was early in his career.
I mean, he was dynamic. All right, well, Ty, confirmed, we went on another tangent. Third time's a charm, though. You know what? Let's just take a break now. Let's take our first break now. There's some good, fun banter, but I kind of want to get down to brass tacks. We got to talk some hockey here. You know, it's getting warmer. The trade deadline is heating up. It's getting warmer and warmer as we get closer to it.
All right.
There's a lot to talk about there.
Okay.
We can touch on some actual on-ice topics if you want. I got some stuff. Hopefully I'll remember. I'll probably forget.
Oh, he's got some stuff.
I'll probably remember like 70% of what I want to talk about.
That's all right.
And then 2 hours later, after we're done, I'm like, oh, damn. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. First break of the show, and then we'll come back and talk plenty of hockey.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're back. Ty, it's time to talk some actual sports. How does that sound? Specifically the sport
bad,
of...
Bad, but let's go.
Specifically the sport of ice hockey. And the local team that wears a spoked B on their jersey. The shocker.
Providence Bruins.
Shocker for our listeners. We are going to talk about the Bruins. Probably for the rest of this podcast. There's not too much we need to really... There's not too much from the past week of the team's performances that I really need to dig into. But obviously Jake DeBrusque is back, and that I think the impact has been obvious. I think it's allowed them to, at least their top nine forwards, they've mostly been able to slot them in as they want. And I mean, we talked about it while DeBrusque was out, where it's like, you guys are underrating him at this point. You know, he's played really well with Bergeron and Marchand. Comes back, he's got two goals in two games or whatever it is.
Both game opening goals.
Yeah, he comes right back. Comes right back, sets the tone, puts the puck in the net. Just a huge impact. And you know, if they're healthy, if they are set up the way they are at forward top nine, I feel pretty good about that. I know that you're talking about they could use a depth forward at the trade deadline, which we can get into. But I think you're seeing right there that like the impact DeBrusque has had has been sort of underrated in overall in the city.
Yeah, I would agree. And what I was really excited about is that, or what made me kind of smile this morning was I had written something on the website about, you know, not trading a lot of pieces off this roster. It's not of great interest to me. And somebody said, so you're telling me you wouldn't trade Jake DeBrusque for Patrick Kane? And I wouldn't, personally. But I was kind of encouraged because I saw people replying saying, no, I wouldn't. And I was like, wow, okay, people are starting to get it now that,
yeah,
that he is a great fit with that line. He's on a great contract, too, $4 million for a top-line wing. And he's better than what the market has to provide right now, which I think is important. It's an important development for this team, is for that to be the case. And, you know, you mentioned it, two goals in two games. And I think what you're seeing, too, Matt, is that the goals are goals that pretty much only he can score. And that may sound kind of strange, but like...
Only he can score on the Bruins.
Yeah, in terms of like getting inside ice with speed and momentum, you know, like we've seen it now. Like Craig Smith can't score those kind of goals, right? Taylor Hall, he could, but I almost think he's a little too rangy, if that's the right way to say it. Like his stride is almost too long to have those kind of tight space maneuvers.
What you're talking about is a nose for the net, which basically, like DeBrusque has that as well as anyone on the Bruins.
Yeah, and it's actually been a calendar year now, basically, since he's been with Bergeron and Marchand. 37 goals, 50 something points. Like you'll take that. That is over the course of a 82 game season, that's a 40 something goal pace, right? So you'll take what you're getting there. And I think that, you know, allowing DeBrusque fitting with that top line allows everyone else to slide into place. And I think that's what's most important about this team right now.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when he got injured in the Winter Classic, he was on pace for 36 goals, I believe. So now, with two more goals in his last two after that, he's got to be on a 40-goal pace now. That's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, he could still hit 30 this year. Wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me if he hits 30, like just based on how he fits. I think especially Matt on the power play. Like, you know, it's more than just net front. It's retrievals. It's extending plays. It's you know, getting to the hard areas of the ice. And that's something that he does really well. So it's great to have him back. And now the question becomes, what do you want to target another forward? Because I do. I do personally, just based on what happened. You know, when he's out and when Nosek's out, your go-tos are Jacob Lauko and Joona Koponen. And not, you know, nothing against those guys, but could you maybe get a little better there? Is that possible? And I think Lauko has been good, but I also, you know, I got to acknowledge the fact that when he plays about 9 minutes a game, right? So that's not replacing Jake DeBrusque.
He's basically just going out there 5-on-5.
Exactly.
Every 5 minutes or whatever the range of time is. Yeah. No, I get that. He's not ready to play in other situations. Lauko feels to me like a guy who could eventually grow into a penalty-killing forward, like energy forward type of guy.
Yeah, he's here.
Yeah. He might not be here. They might trade him, in the next month or so, whatever, the next couple of weeks. But I think that's a good segue because I had it in my notes here. It feels like the only real hole in their forward group is you could look at it one of two things: third line right wing, fourth line center. You know, like third line right wing, that's where they've had Trent Frederick for a while. They had him there for a while.
It kind of solves itself, too. Right? Mm-hmm. Frederick's your fourth line center right now.
Yeah, and then, but Nosek gets hurt. They move Frederick down to a fourth line center. Frederick is kind of dominant as a fourth line guy. Right?
Yeah, if he can start winning some more faceoffs, he could be. But I've liked that line, Foligno, Frederick, and Greer. You know, that's a lot of heaviness. That's a lot of energy, you know.
I just feel like he's a lot to deal with for a fourth line for an opposing fourth line forward.
Yeah, if he brings that third line style to the fourth line, right? And I think he has done that with his latest move there. Yeah, Frederick is paced for 20 goals, which is crazy because he doesn't play on the power play. You know, like, if you got a 20-goal scorer who doesn't play on the power play, you're doing something right, right?
He's the garbage man. And he's Duke the Dumpster Drozzi over there.
Yeah. What I've liked about Frederick, though, is that there's confidence now with his shot, right? He used to kind of hold, and the chance would evaporate. Now, put the puck in a stick, he's rocketing that as soon as he can, right?
And yeah, I think
that's huge.
That goal the other day.
Against Islanders?
The Islanders, yeah. He picks off the... it was a bad pass attempt through the neutral zone. He basically picks it off. It goes off the boards right to him, gets the zone entry himself, and then just fires. And it looked like he timed it perfectly where, like, he waited till he had, like, a screen or traffic in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a nice, savvy, unassisted goal by Trent Frederick. You know, it was a sign of overall growth, which I think you've been talking about. But, he's been great as the fourth-line center. But now, with that, you have Craig Smith as the third-line right wing. And Craig Smith just hasn't been himself at all this year. Or maybe this is what he is at this point. I don't know. But he certainly hasn't been the guy that they got originally a couple years ago. And so that, to me, if you want to keep Frederick at fourth line center, maybe that's your solution. Then third line right wing might be an area where the Bruins could go out and target someone at the deadline.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at it because, you know, I like Craig Smith. He's given you a ton of effort, ton of energy. But the results haven't been there, and I think the switch from the system stylistically hasn't helped him. He's a volume shooter. This team is not about volume shooting anymore. They're about quality shooting. So, you know, that's kind of hurt him, I think, in a way. And it's been tough to get consistent playing time, consistent role. You know, he's basically what? He's got 4 goals and I want to say 10 points in 42 games.
That's not just it's, not nearly enough.
It's a lot to say that this guy is going to be your third line right wing, you know, in the playoffs, or if something were to go wrong and the injuries kind of pile up, you know, that's a bit worrisome to me. You know, so who's out there, right? Who do you look at? And, you know, it's funny because you only have so many roster spots, right? So let's say, you know, you don't want to waive AJ Greer. You don't want to waive any of these other guys. So what do you do? Do you have room to get both a center and a wing? Or assuming they get a defenseman, right? Like where do you go from there? So I find that fascinating. I find that very interesting. I'm not sure where they're going to go with it. You know, maybe they want to get a guy who can play center and wing. You know, a Nick Bjugstad, for example. That's something worth watching, though, between now and March 3rd.
Yeah, I mean, you've also mentioned Ivan Barbashev, who has been linked to the Bruins.
Yeah.
I know he's not a great face-off man, so I don't know if
they
he's
want
an
a
ideal
first-round pick for him.
Well, I mean, it feels like they have to give up a first-round pick no matter what, which right. I guess we can sort of get into that. But, like Ivan Barbashev is a guy you mentioned. Nick Bonino is a guy that's coming. Is it Lafferty?
Lafferty in Chicago.
He's another guy.
He's had a good season. Now, what I'm curious about is, do the Penguins start selling? And if the Penguins start selling, you know, would you want Teddy Bluger as insurance? You know, a lefty, a guy who's put a ton of PK, not having a great season, I'm not going to lie to you, but, you know, another option there, right, as a lefty kind of face-off option. So I'm looking at what they got right now and trying to figure out. I think the Penguins, I think I was reading that they have made Jeff Petrie available for trade. Looks like they may be embracing the idea of selling. Are there other parts that you want to strip away from, you know, from Pittsburgh? So, and another guy who I'm really curious about, and his name has kind of been out there a little bit, but I don't know if that's more fans wanting him or Washington floating him out there, would be Garnett Hathaway. And this guy is a mean, nasty MF-er.
Recent Bruins villain.
Yeah.
Hathaway.
He's like a McAvoy nemesis. He's always going after Charlie McAvoy. But local guy, New England guy. I think he's from Maine, I want to say. But just a nasty kind of bottom sixer who can create some energy and throw his weight around. And actually had a pretty decent season offensively, I want to say, a couple of years ago. So I know that The Caps may be embracing selling too. I think there's rumors that Dmitry Orlov is available, defenseman. Dmitry Orlov, I might want him over Gavrikov, honestly. Like,
I get all these Dmitrys confused. Dmitry Kulikov, and there's someone else.
Dmitry Young, the old baseball player.
Dmitry Kristic, Bruins legend.
Of course, of course. But yeah, like there's a lot of different ways they can go with it.
But you would like Orlov.
I would like Orlov more than I'd like Gavrikov for a first, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, Orlov, if you remember, Orlov took out Kevin Miller in the playoffs. It was kind of a...
Oh, that was Orlov.
It was kind of a questionable hit. Like, you know.
I mean, did it basically end his career?
Yes.
He might have played
after,
but like, he was never the same.
Yeah, maybe that's an issue then for a guy like Marchand. Like, no, I don't want him in here.
Right. Yeah, that would risk, you know, upsetting the room.
Right.
Hathaway have? I mean, I don't know if the,
no, I think
it's more just an on-ice competitive
you'd
sort
understand
of thing.
That it's, or it, than like, it's I don't his like role. Him. Right, right. Like, I don't think that Hathaway has ever tried to maim McAvoy. I think he's more like he gets under his skin, which is what Peter Laviolette probably wants. Be like, hey, right, that's the best defenseman on this team. Go try to get him in the box with you. Like, I understand that, and I think they would to a degree. You know, listen, if Brad Marchand and Marcus Johansson could make up, I feel like everyone should be able to make up, you know, understanding that it's the playoffs and you ought to win the Stanley Cup.
What? You're talking about when he swiped his elbow at the soft spot of Marcus Johansson's head? What's wrong with that? So he gave him a little swipe with the elbow to the back of the head. What's the big deal?
Marchand was tweeting at Marty Biron, talking about, he's like, I gave a guy a love tap and I got 6 games. I think he was referencing the Tristan Jarry incident.
Yeah, that's what I thought too, yeah.
And
you did kind of just go right up to him and punch him, Brad.
Jarry
I remember thinking 6 games was too much for that.
Jarry had it coming. That's what I gotta say about that.
He must have said, I remember you said, I think, you're like, he must have said something real garbage. But then it came out that he was just like, yeah, how do you like that? Or something, like, said something completely generic.
But there was something that happened in that game too that I think like pissed the Bruins off. Like, I think they lost someone to injury or something. So Marchand already had like a bee under his bonnet.
I think he got chippy under a pile with someone.
Yeah.
He did a classic poke in the kidneys.
Yeah.
At the bottom of a pile move. Yeah, something
I can't remember
like that.
Now. No,
I doubt it was just whatever that came out that Jarry said that, you know, got him.
Can Barth stop texting
face?
Us, by the way? My Barth phone's going crazy. And I'm
put
like,
your phone away. We had
well,
a good...
I got the watch. I got my heart watch.
So do I do.
So I'm like, oh, God, is my heart going crazy?
Right. No, it's, I mean, yeah, Barth, shut up. We're recording. You know this.
Yeah. No one cares.
You sent him the notification. What's he telling us about, like, the top 5 offensive linemen at Michigan State?
He's like, I'm watching film on Tulane. I'm like, no, go outside.
He might not be far off from what he's doing as we speak.
But we love him.
Go read Alex Barr's Patriots coverage. There's so much of it. And he's going to be like a pig and slop in a couple months when the draft comes. It's just going to be disgusting. We're going to have to walk around the office in ponchos, this kid.
What are you doing today? I'm breaking down Liberty footage. Please don't. Please go home.
And I'm doing it outside in the mud. What do you have Wi-Fi?
I'm recreating
out there?
The combine with myself.
I got a Wi-Fi hotspot. It's fine. And my computer is mudproof.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about Bruins.
Yeah, I don't like
ice hockey.
If they only have one, I've said this to you before, but if they only have room for one bolt in the chamber, what do you want to spend it on? A forward or a D? I'm leaning forward still, based on what I've seen with this team, does not have Jake DeBrusk. Because it's entirely possible that you could lose a DeBrusk, a Marchand, a Pastrnak, a Hall. Like, the odds indicate you will have to go through an injury at some point. And I believe you'd be better off having stronger forward depth, because your defensive depth already goes 9 deep if you include Stralman and Riley.
Yeah. No, if you're talking just for depth, move forward. If you're talking like a real impact guy, defense, that's how I would parse out that debate.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess generally I'd say forward. Yeah, I wouldn't mind another another depth guy to one of those bottom 6 spots like we were talking about. And it doesn't sound like it sounds like they could get, like, that guy would probably have a bigger impact than like a 7th-8th defenseman.
Yeah,
right?
And the other part of it, you know, is that I'm really bummed that a guy like Jonathan Toews is not going to be on the move. I would have loved to have seen Jonathan Toews with the Bruins. The more I thought about it, the more I was like, okay, this would actually be a good fit, because, you know, they roll their lines so consistently that he would be a fourth line center, but not really. Like, deployment would probably change that. He'd probably be closer. You know, he'd be neck and neck with the Coyle line in terms of ice time. So, and he's a dominant lefty face-off option, which they could use. They could use another one of those.
And
so,
not to mention the leadership. And I feel like that's a guy that could use those intent, has that innate quality to elevate just the room around him in terms of confidence and things like that. I know that's a lot of hockey people aren't comfortable talking about stuff like that because there's no way to quantify that.
Well, I think Ryan O'Reilly's doing it for the Leafs.
Yeah. You were talking about you're a scared Ryan.
I know he's
a little bit of a boogeyman after that Blues series, but he can't be the same guy.
Right? It all depends how they use him, right? Like I don't know if I'm afraid of him as much as I'm afraid of Toronto now having a really formidable 1-2-3 down the middle, which they haven't had. You know, you go back to these Boston versus Toronto series, they had Tavares and they had Matthews, but once you got beyond that, you're like, Alex Kerfoot, you know, okay, you can handle that. You know, you know, now it's like, okay, that's Ryan O'Reilly's a really good third line center.
Yeah,
it might wash out you having Charlie Coyle.
Right. Yeah, but would it shock you if we get into a Bruins Leafs series and we come out of like, you know, O'Reilly's giving that Bergeron line trouble again. This could be a problem, right?
Yeah.
That could be something to be thinking about.
So it'd be interesting, right? Like, what would their lineup complexion be? Because I think O'Reilly and Marner is a pretty good defensive. That's a pretty good two-way line. What would they use that against? Would they use that against Zacha, Krejci, Pasternak? Because that's a really good offensive line. It's actually one of the better offensive lines in hockey this year. Or would they want to use it against Bergeron, Marchand, and DeBrusk? And so that's kind of the element of like that we're talking about DeBrusk is like pick your poison, right? Like if the Bruins have that, I'm still confident, right? It's just, you know, first of all, Toronto's going to win a round before we even talk about this. But
yeah, play in May and then we'll talk.
Yeah, but I do think they have O'Reilly gives them another dynamic that they don't have. Think about it this way, Matt, is that they acquired Ryan O'Reilly and he immediately became their most accomplished playoff performer. He had 56 right. career playoff points, I think. And the next closest is John Tavares at 36 points. Like, he's quite a get for them.
Toronto's like, I know, we've sucked. Shut up. But Why are you being mean to us now?
The other part of it, though, is that I don't know if Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov can outduel Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman for a 7-game series. Like, no matter what combination you put in there, I don't know if what they
Not
have in net
enough.
Can outduel what you have in net.
I keep calling him Samsonov. It doesn't seem to be catching on, though. I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, it doesn't catch on, Matt, because he actually wanted to be called that at one point in his career. And now he's like, no, I'm Samsonov. He's like, no, you're Samsonov. Like,
you picked that in the beginning.
You must stick with that.
You've made your bed, sir. That reminded me of that Clickhole meme where it's like Roald Dahl's like, my name's Ronald. But then the company made a typo and I asked them to change it. And they said no. And that's it. Well, all right. You're Roald Dahl for the rest of your life and career.
I always thought I was Ronald, personally. That's like always... you know, I for years thought it was Downtown Abbey. I'm like, what the hell is Daunton?
what is that? I thought that too. That's like the Mandela effect that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
I thought it was Downtown Abbey for a long time.
Yeah. My grandmother loves that show.
Not surprised. All right. Where were we? Oh, yeah. This popped in my head while we were talking about Ryan O'Reilly. That Blues series, he sort of picked on the Brandon Carlo-Torey Krug pairing, if I remember correctly, especially at, it might have been Game 7, where he's basically bullied Carlo and Krug behind the net. And then scored with his net front. I'm pretty sure that was the infamous Game 7.
Well, that was probably by design in the sense that the Brandon Carlo Torrey Krug pairing was always out there when the Bergeron line was out there.
Mm.
So that may have just been a byproduct of that.
Yeah,
at the same time.
But I'm just saying now he'd be going up against Lindholm most likely. So
yeah, no, that's
I feel
true.
Like as much as I like Torrey Krug, I feel like that's a big difference in terms of defense, and he's not going to be able to just push Lindholm around.
Yeah,
like
and also...
Would, like he would a Torrey Krug or a Carlo.
And we also have to acknowledge, too, that O'Reilly's older now, right? And
he's had some
injuries. So we'll have to wait and see. But I do like... You know, listen, it's an arms race in the East with Tarasenko going to the Rangers.
It's already on.
With Horvat going to the Islanders. Now, I think the Islanders are a little too far out of it to really make a run out of it. But if they do, you know, they could. And O'Reilly in Toronto now, so...
Popular sentiment is like... Timo Meier might go to Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina, New Jersey. Those are the two teams in the East have been mentioned with Meier quite a bit.
What happened to New Jersey? I feel like there's been no buzz about them at all.
I think they play in New Jersey, and that's why. Like, they're not
They're still like in there. They still feel like a top contender. Like they could make noise in the playoffs. Because I feel like it's all about the Bruins and Canes, and then the Leafs for obvious reasons. But
well, I think
nobody's
that,
talking about the Devils.
I think you talk to people and they think that they're ahead of schedule, like in their timeline. So it's almost like whatever they do is a bonus. I don't know if there's real expectations
they're,
there.
Yeah, they're totally the top seed team that fouls out in the first round. It's like, all right, we're not ready to take that step yet.
Yeah, well, what I will say, though, is Jack Hughes is a freak. Guy's an absolute monster.
Yeah, they got two really good centers. So, I mean, I feel like they're going to be good for a while.
I also wonder, too, if Luke Hughes joins their team after the NCAA season. I wonder if they make that happen as well. He's Jack's brother, defenseman, drafted real high. I wonder if they make that happen once I believe he's at Michigan, I want to say. I might be wrong on that, but... once that season's over, I wonder if he joins their program as well.
Well, that'd be interesting. Yeah, I just feel like there hasn't been much.
I can tell you why team
as a contender.
Like, I think that people look at that team and say, Vitek Vanacek and Mackenzie Blackwood. Yeah, okay. Yeah, like I think there's an element of that as well.
Again, like, yeah, who can honestly match the Bruins like the Rangers with Shesterkin? It's pretty much it as far as goalies. I guess Frederick Anderson, but he's never healthy.
Yeah, the kid in Carolina, Kochakov, I mean, if they turn to him, you know, he's been good. Freddie Anderson has been good against the Bruins, but health is a big thing with him. I think the only team that I think can match up with the Bruins is the Hurricanes. And they're going to add. Like,
yeah,
with Pacioretty on LTIR, they're going to add. It's just a matter of who. You know, they have prospects. You know, this is their time to cash in. So, But at the same time, they missed out on Horvat. They missed out on O'Reilly. They're going to miss out on Taves because Taves' illness. He's not going to be traded. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of their big need, in my opinion, was another center because I don't fear Kotkaniemi as a top six center. You know, if that's the route they go, so you know they still need that Vinny Trocheck replacement, right? In my opinion, I could be wrong, but that's just how I look at that roster. But you know, if they can swing a trade for a big time center of some sort, like. I would be a little nervous about that team.
So you think in a Bruins Canes playoff series, it would be the Bruins' superior forward depth that would ultimately be like the difference. That's what would win them the series.
I think it'd be home ice. Honestly,
on the home ice thing, yeah. But just factor in the ice.
Mm-hmm.
But the players on the ice,
mm-hmm.
It would be the forwards for the Bruins that, you know, like that's the biggest difference between the two teams. Because I feel like defensively they're pretty similar. In terms of depth, the way they play.
Yeah, I think the Bruins have one more horse on the back end than Carolina.
I feel like it has to be, we've talked about it before, but like the Canes, they need Sebastian Aho to be the best player on the ice at all times.
I feel like I'm getting slightly boxed in here only because I think Carolina is such a different team on home ice than on the road. And it's so hard for me to look at them without factoring in, you know, the venue. Because when you saw that game, that Sunday game between the Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes right before the All-Star break, you know, when they get you playing their brand of hockey, they are an absolute machine. And it's so hard to derail them. It's so hard to get out of your own zone. Like, they come at you in waves, right? On the road, that's harder. That's just harder for them to do on the road.
Yeah,
so
you can't match up the right way and get the last change and all.
Yeah,
that
think about it. Like they were able to get Bergeron away from Jordan Staal last year on home ice, and you saw it. The Bergeron line was a machine on home ice in that series. On the road, it was a different story. So, you know, yes, I think the Bruins forward depth is a touch better, but you also need Taylor Hall to be Taylor Hall. You need David Pastrnak to be David Pastrnak, right? So that's where I come back to the defense. Where I think that the Bruins have, I think, one more horse. Brent Burns is good, but he's not Brent Burns 2016 anymore, right? So,
Looked good in that one Bruins game. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they had that. The kid looked really good in that Bruins game. I thought was a player that almost no one knows about, I imagine. Jalen Chatfield. I thought he was really good against the Bruins in that game, but he's another one. I don't think he's played in the playoffs, so you got to see how he looks in that situation in that arena as well.
All right, let's talk about Vladislav Gavrikov. I feel like there's so much reporting on it, and you've been at the cutting edge of the reporting on it yourself. You were on NBC Sports Boston the other night, saying what guys like Elliot Freeman are saying now, which is that the Bruins basically have a deal in place for Gavrikov, but they got to make another trade to clear cap space before they can have it, before they can make the Gavrikov trade happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't seem so hot on Gavrikov now that you've sort of taken a closer look at it. I know I'm sure you've watched a lot of it, and I'm sure you've looked into the numbers. Someone responded to me on Twitter and said Gavrikov is genuinely terrible from an analytics standpoint, is how this gentleman
phrased
it.
Not far off.
I know, but like, what does that mean? Like, he has a bad number here, so you're telling me like this number bad equals player bad?
So
I know you've been saying like the fact that he's on the worst team in the league could be a factor.
Yeah.
And I bring up Hampus Lindholm last year.
Right.
It's a great example. His Corsi went up by 5%. After he went from the Ducks to the Bruins. So, I mean, they like Gavrikov. They're talking about trading a first-round pick for him, and I still feel that would be an overpay. But if they're trading a first-round pick for Gavrikov, they obviously view him as a regular, as a guy he's going to be an upgrade over someone in the lineup. Not necessarily Grizzlick, and we can talk more about Grizzlick after, but do they see him maybe as an upgrade over Forbert? Or, this is what I've been cooking up in my own crazy little brain over here. The fact that they're also linked to Luke Shen, who's a right shot defenseman, could they possibly look at Gavrikov as a guy they play on the right side? Could they, Forbert Gavrikov, is that too plotting of a pair? Would that not work? Is that redundant? Like, do they see him as like maybe they could put in Gavrikov for a Connor Clifton if they need more size? That's just the thought that's coming across my
mind. Trying to think in my head. I don't know if Gavrikov has played the right side. I haven't seen a ton of Blue Jackets this year. I think he's been primarily on the left side because they have a limited supply of left shot D because they've had so many injuries in Columbus this year. So I want to say he's played primarily on the left. What I can tell you about Gavrikov when it comes to his numbers being as bad as they are is that I believe that he's played almost 40% of his ice time this year against what you would categorize as elite players based on metrics and micro stats and advanced analytics. He's played against a lot of high-end competition because he's Columbus's best defenseman. They are a bad team. They've had bad goaltending for a large chunk of the season. Korpisalo is playing better, but they haven't. I think their save percentage of the team ranks, I think, ninth worst in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So just not a great team.
So maybe the Bruins see value in that. Like, he plays against the top competition, and so you take that guy and put him in our lineup, then it'll all be better for him and for the team.
I would like to get a closer viewing. I'm probably going to go back and do this tonight at some point. I'd like to see how he played against teams like Carolina. I'd like to see how he played against teams like Tampa, teams that you may play in the playoffs. Just get a better read for how he is. What I can tell you, though, as well, is that last year he had 32 even strength points. That was the 12th most among left shot defensemen in the NHL. It's a pretty good production, you know, especially at evens for a left shot D. So, you know, he has some offensive touch.
That's why I've been describing him privately.
Yes.
I'll say it publicly as a poor man's Lindholm. Not as good as Lindholm.
I can see that. Yeah.
But he skates decently well for a guy his size, and he might be a better. I know you said you don't think he's a good fit. Or not the best fit for what they want to do defensively because of his breakout passes and things like that. But I don't know. He seems like a better fit than Luke Shen.
Yeah. Based on the data that I've seen and that's been made available, it seems that he's good at carries, you know, carrying the puck through the neutral zone, which, I mean, that works for this system. It's just how much, you know, how many high danger plays can he make, and do they want him to do that, right? Like, do they want him to be steadier? What do they want him to do? That's what I'm really curious about.
Well, I remember, you said earlier on Felger Maz that, like, he takes a safe play as opposed to trying to, like, make a dynamic play when he's...
Yeah, yeah, they call it like dumping rates or retrieval rates,
right.
Something like that, yeah.
Do you think maybe Jim Montgomery would bring that out of him? Because that's what Jim Montgomery's difference has been this year, is that he's gotten the most out of guys that they weren't getting the most out of earlier. Maybe he sits him down and says, look, Vlad, you're better than that. Like, go make a play. Like, we got really, really good forwards for you to pass to. Make the pass to them, and they'll do the rest. Do you think maybe there's a possibility of that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is that. But for me, I don't know if he's that much better than Matt Grizzlick outside of he's a little bit taller. So...
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was
He's six
baller.
Inches taller.
That's pretty big.
It is. But What I think has been very encouraging for me this year is that Matt Grizzlick has been just as good with Charlie McAvoy as he's been without him. So I find that very interesting if you're the Bruins, because I think that we've all boxed ourselves into thinking that it's either Matt Grizzlick is on the top pairing or he's traded. Well, what if he's on the second pairing or the third pairing? Isn't that more in line with what we think he should be?
I ain't in that box. I said trade him. I said second or third pair.
I'm saying people are, though. But I think I want to say that with Grizzlick on the ice at 5-on-5, away from McAvoy, the Bruins have an on-ice goal differential of, I think, plus 14. I think it's 23-9. I might be like one goal off either way.
But without very McAvoy, good. That implies that he's not playing against as good of opponents. I mean, is that a factor?
But if he's successful.
But he's having success. That's good. That's what I mean.
Like,
but that's to your point. Like, he's fine as a second or third pairing defenseman. You don't have to get rid of him.
You don't have to get rid of him. And I think the other part of it is you don't have to trade a first round pick for a guy who might be just as good, just a little bit taller. Like, that's kind of how I look at it. Like, and I bring this up, Matt, because last year, with McAvoy, Grizzlick was a plus 20 goal differential. I think it was 30 to 10. Without him, it was a plus 5. And so that told you last year that, oh, Grizzlick needs McAvoy. This year, it's looking like Grizzlick has found a way to succeed without 73 on the right. And that's very important, in my opinion, because of what he does.
So tell me, you texted me about it the other day. You brought it up on the radio earlier. They play a little bit differently in the defensive zone where, you know, Grizzlick and pretty much anybody, they're not taking as much of a beating. And this was crazy to me that, like, I didn't even think about this, that, like, under Cassidy, it was almost by design mm-hmm. that a defenseman would take a hit behind the net to make pass. And, like, I get the thinking where, like, you got a guy open now because this guy, you know, closed in on you. But physically, that's not really going to hold up over, you know, 28 games into mid-June. And so maybe Cassidy lost sight of that, and that's why we've seen so many of these Bruins injuries on defense in recent years. So maybe that's going to change now, but I'll let you explain. They have better forward support, and the defensemen aren't, you know, getting like worn down as much.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you go back to when we were talking 2021, 2022, you know, Mike Riley, a big reason why he was here was Brandon Carlo would have a defenseman to pass to who could break it out the other way. It was like now they want the forwards to come back and help out so that these forechecks can't come in and blast the defenseman because, okay, now it's an easy zone exit for us, right? Like, that's kind of, I think, how they look at it. So it's just stronger support. It's involving the forwards versus saying, hey, D, we're going to go D to D, but our D needs to take a massive hit to make that play happen. Like, and so
you need to get drilled by Brady Tkachuk every time you touch the puck.
And if you look at the numbers in terms of hits taken by the defense, they are down versus last year, especially for a guy like Brandon Carlo, who I'm pretty sure in the playoffs to these last two seasons was taking like 16 hits per 60 minutes. It was something just not sustainable. You're like, this guy's going to get killed. And so I think that is a big difference that you're noticing with this team now is tweaks from Gruden. And from Montgomery, it's more D friendly and less punishment physically.
I think you're
seeing the effects of it. I mean, Grizzlick has been upright all year. Carlo, he had the incident in the home opener, but he's been fine since. Like, it's paying off. It's making a big difference. I think it's a big reason why they're off to such a good start, or, you know, they've been so good is that they have a consistent lineup. They're not worrying. Their D aren't getting battered every game because it does take a toll on you.
I was when you first brought this up to me, I was like Gary Busey in the movie Black Sheep. I was like, why didn't you tell me? Well, here's my apology.
Well, it was something that I thought I noticed, but I couldn't tell if it was like, this is just my brain thinking something is there. But then I talked to people about it, and Bob Beers on the hockey show talked about it in greater detail. And I was like, oh, awesome. So my brain isn't deceiving me. And then, you know, asking around, finding out more about it. It's true. It's what they were like. It is by design. They do not want their defensemen taking as much physical punishment as they have in the past because that has been their downfall. They may have won last year's series against Carolina if Hampus Lindholm doesn't have to miss three games. Like, they may very well win that series if that happened. But
I forgot about that.
You know, like it. So they look at it and say, we need to have healthy defense. How do you have a healthy defense? Well, for one, they don't get blasted to the boards every time they get the puck behind their own net.
The Democrat is blasting me. All right, I'm not going to go down that road.
But no, you know what's funny though is that I believe, and I might be wrong on this because it was just so much data at once, so many numbers I was looking at. I think that Gavrikov's retrieval numbers, puck retrieval behind his own net, are not that good. So I was like, ooh, maybe that's an issue too. But you know, I think we'd have to see. What I can tell you about Gavrikov, based on the micro stats, the advanced numbers, is that his defensive impact has gone down these last few years. So if you're the Bruins and you're Bruins media, Bruins fans, you have to say, is that because of the team he's on, or is that because of what he himself is doing? It's a valid question that I truthfully do not have the answer to right now.
Columbus hasn't been good his whole career. They haven't been good since 2019.
They haven't been good since Tortorella left. Like, that's what I would say. Like, yeah. Once that happened, it was like, okay.
I just think inevitably it's harder for you to get that retrieval and breakout game going when the guys you're making the passes to just aren't good because you suck and you're playing against a superior team. I just feel like that. And like, yeah, and like you said, like, people that just point directly to the analytics, I don't think they're watching. That's why that Twitter reply to it just struck me as like, well, you know, if you just skip the game and just look at this number on a sheet, he's actually bad. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know for sure. I'm not claiming to be an expert.
I don't even know for sure. I don't. Not, I haven't seen enough of Columbus this year.
I'm not claiming to be an expert on the Blue Jackets or Vlad Gavrikov at all. I didn't know who he was until a month ago when you brought him up. Yeah. So it's like, I fully admit that. But at the same time, it's like, I just, you're not telling me the whole story. And I think just based on the way the Bruins are operating, if you believe all the reporting, I believe it because you're saying it. The way the Bruins are operating, they look at Gavrikov as a guy who's, well, I think he's just had some bad luck because he's on a bad team. And if we put him on our team, he'll be an asset. So
yeah,
that's how I look at it. Just to circle back to the thing about Grzelcyk and the new defensive strategy, my only question is how did Carolina counteract that? Because it seems like they did a good job counteracting that. And I know you might say it's because they were at home.
Speed, speed, speed.
I thought you were going to say they were at home.
No, well, I mean, factor.
Well,
look at the game in Boston on Black Friday, and then look at the game in January in Carolina. Two totally different games. Totally different games. And I think it's because Carolina couldn't get that spin cycle going. They couldn't get that, we're going to come at you in waves, because they can't pick the matchups. Mm-hmm. I thought guys that they targeted in that game in Carolina, Brandon Carlo was one of them. Hampus Lindholm was one of them. Like, the bigger guys. And Lindholm could move, so that's not, you know. But they said, we're going to use our speed and get in on these guys. Basically, just make body plays to extend possession time and wear them down. And I think that's, you know, that's how they've gotten on top of them. I think teams that have gotten on top of the Bruins have done so with pace, making their defensemen out of their comfort zone, you know, taking away that weak side activation, making them have their head on a swivel saying, okay, what's going on? Who's behind me? Like, what are we doing here? So I think that's one thing Carolina can do to you. You look at Carolina against these teams, like, you look at their numbers too. Few teams can match what Carolina does in terms of dictating pace. And I think that when they're on home ice, dictating pace is that much easier for them. So I think that's how they took the Bruins out of their element, was just they said, we're going to play at the pace we want to play, not the pace you want to play. So that's what makes them a dangerous team, I think.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I feel like if they want to steal a game in Carolina, it's going to have to be because Linus Ullmark played out of his mind, which I'm not ruling out.
That feels right.
I'm not ruling out.
They almost did it.
We're not trading Ullmark, by the way.
Yeah, no.
Great take, Felger, and our former colleague, Jones.
I mean, a sadist take. I think
it was painful, and it was hilarious because I watched the clip that NBC posted. I didn't realize that Hurley was there sitting between them.
Yeah,
and then Hurley shared the actual like full video. I was started dying laughing. I was like, Hurley's sitting there, get his ears are starting to bleed listening to these two.
Yeah, I just you know, everything about this team and your theoretical sort of problems moving forward, that's problems you handle when the time comes. You don't worry about that now. This is you. The goal of the 2022-23 Boston Bruins is you live in the moment. Everyone is living in the moment. You're not worrying about Jeremy Swayman's future extension, how much that's going to cost. You're not worried about the David Pastrnak contract, what that's going to cost. It's about winning right now. So are the Bruins going to have an expensive tandem next year? Yeah, probably. But I would also tell you this, that they had quite an expensive tandem with Halak and Rask for years, and that worked out pretty well for them in terms of success and stability. So I think that, you know, you want that. And I'm also, you know, I'm not one to sit here and say, the Bruins should trade either their 1A or their 1B and leave everything up to chance. It's robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, doing anything like that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, you want a defenseman? Find another way to get a defenseman.
Right. tell me who was worth it for a trade like that, first of all.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah, like, just like logically speaking, if the Bruins win the Stanley Cup this year and Linus Ullmark is your Conn Smythe Trophy winner, then you think about trade. Like, if you can get an absolute haul for him in the offseason, that's something I would think about. But right now, that's just insane. Worth discussing.
Can
honestly.
I give you my quick take on,
we just
on
make
that
fun,
theory?
We should just make fun of Felger and Jonesy. But yeah, go ahead.
I don't trade him even for a haul. And I'll tell you why. He makes $5 million. If you have, have a top three goaltender in the NHL making $5 million, it opens up a world of possibilities that you may otherwise not have. And I think it's especially important with Pastrnak probably going to be checking in at, you know, we keep throwing this number out. Every time we talk about it, I think the number gets higher. 12.5. Like, $12.5 million may be what he's at now. Like,
I mean, the guy might win the Rocket Richard or the Rocket Richard Trophy, as Joe Murray called it earlier.
he knew he messed that up right away. It was funny. The first break, he goes,
poor Joe.
Called the Rocket Richard. I was like, yeah, it's
poor,
all right.
Poor Joe. It happens.
Yeah, but you know, I think that when you have value contracts, it changes everything. So I'm not like I would be reluctant to trade Ullmark even for that haul you're talking about, because I'm like, no, man, because you're going to have to pinch pennies. Like, paying Pastrnak what you pay him, you're going to have to pinch pennies. So it's like, I'd rather have the $5 million goaltender that I know is going to be one of the best in the league than throwing the keys to Swayman and saying, have at it, baby. Like, it's just, I don't know. There's something about it that that's such a value contract that I want to keep that.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny how, like, everyone complained about Tuukka's contract for so long. Now they have one of the best. They have maybe the best goalie contract.
And they hated that
league.
Contract, too, in the beginning.
Oh, you people hated the Ullmark contract.
Why are you giving them more like Skidmark? Like, shut up, you nerds. I've never seen anyone race the poop to bed quite like that. Like, it was like a preseason game, and they were like, that's it. He's a bust. Pack it in. I'm like, it's been 25 minutes. What are we
seriously
doing?
Seriously. It's been a week.
You know, and I don't know if I've told the story before, but I talked to people in Buffalo.
They should have gone with Swayman and Samsonov.
When they signed Ullmark, I talked to people in Buffalo, and I said, give me the read on this kid. Like, you know, what's the deal? What's it like? And they said, really good goaltender. You have to watch how many games he plays, because he's got a bit of injury history, a bit of injury concerns. And then I talked to the Bruins people about it. And they said, no, we believe that we can tweak the way he plays net, that he is going to be healthier. He's going to be upright. He's not going to have some strain on his body. And I think they've mastered that. They've mastered both the playing time and the stylistic tweaks that allow him to get the most out of his body. What I really like about him this year, Matt, is that his puck tracking, I think, has been sensational. Like, you watch him. If you watch the Bruins when they're in the defensive zone, and you just focus on just watch Ullmark, he is so dialed in. He knows where the shot is going. He knows where it's going to bounce. Like, just, he's been fantastic in that regard. And I think working with Bob Asenza has really elevated his game, taken it to another level, as well as sort of their sports scientists in terms of the strain on his body.
If I make a quick video game reference, it's like if he's playing an action-adventure game and he uses, like, eagle-eye mode, where, like,
you press
down on the joystick and all of a sudden everything goes black around. All you see is the puck. That's sort of what it is for him right now. He's in eagle-eye mode.
Yeah, it's been really remarkable, and give Don Sweeney and the Bruins a lot of credit for identifying a goaltender who was a lot better than what you thought based on what you saw out of him in Buffalo. His raw numbers, you dive in a little bit, you're like, oh, this guy might be actually pretty good. And you know, it turns out they get a steal for $5 million a year for that guy.
Seriously, absolute steal, not trading him. I think we're done. I don't know if there's any other hockey topics you wanted to get into in particular. I thought maybe there was one more thing, but I think we covered it.
I got one more question for you.
What's that?
Patrick Kane, turning it on lately. Would you want to make a trade for Patrick Kane?
Well, yeah, in a vacuum.
Yeah.
But not for what I think it might cost.
Well, because we're just talking about, like, getting a forward. Okay, what if you said, to hell with the depth moves, give me the home run? Would you want that?
But he wouldn't play third line, though. Would he with Coyle?
So here's my thing. I'm out on it. And I'm out on it because I don't see the fit, right? So let's say that you acquire Patrick Kane. He doesn't have the defensive chops to hang with Bergeron and Marchand. He's been a pretty bad defensive player his entire career. And he's got the hip injury, too, right now. That's going to limit his two-way effectiveness, you know, even if he did have two-way effectiveness.
Mm.
Your third line has been utilized as a checking line.
He's not that.
So unless you want to completely reinvent your team dynamic.
Right, you're talking about basically you shuffle the whole thing. You move DeBrusk down to the third line. You put Pasternak back up with Bergeron and Marchand, and you put Patrick Kane with David Krejci.
Yeah.
That's basically what we're doing.
And you shelter the absolute hell out of that second line, which I don't think is something that you want to do. They did that in 2018 with Rick Nash. That when it was Krejci and Nash and DeBrusk, that line started like 80% of their shifts in the O-zone. They were you couldn't rely on them for anything outside of the offense. And that hurt them, I thought.
I feel like the check line right now is sort of that way. Yeah. You're talking about matchups before. I feel like you put your offensive line against that forward group.
Yeah.
Because the two-way game isn't there for them, which is, I mean, it's fine if they're scoring, though.
But yeah, you know. It all depends, too, how you deploy them, right?
Yeah.
But Patrick Kane, I get the allure because of what he's done in the past and his career and obviously all the accolades, but I have a hard time seeing the fit with Patrick Kane and the Boston Bruins, and I think it's telling in a way that you haven't heard the Bruins linked to him. Really, at
right.
all.
Right, and they've been linked to everybody.
Right.
They've been, I just blogged about it earlier today. They're at the very top of Elliot Friedman's latest 32 thoughts. They're the number one thought this week.
Oh, really? I haven't checked it out yet.
And he linked them. Well, I mean, he said a lot of the same things you already said about Gavrikov.
Yeah.
And he said, teams are worried if they're checking it, that they're checking in on Timo Meier, that's another one where, I'm not sure I really see the fit there because
I'd like that a lot. I'd like that a lot.
I would like it.
I don't know if they can make it happen, though.
but would you trade Jake DeBrusk for Timo Meier?
No.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, I just feel like they're checking in just to see what the price would be, especially because if you're talking about trading a first-round pick, you got to see what the price is on everybody.
Yes.
Right? You can't zero in on Gavrikov if you're willing to trade a first-round pick.
I think especially if if the first-round pick is on the table, you got to maximize that first-round pick. You got to go out there and find that dog. That's kind of what it's like. You got to go out there and find what the best deal is for your first-round pick if you're going to be trading one.
I drew the duck blue. Because I never seen a blue duck, and I thought you wanted to see a blue duck.
Scotty,
congrats! You've graduated.
Scotty likes beans.
Hey, kids, it's me. I bet you thought that I was dead. But when I fell over, I just broke my leg and got a hemorrhage in my head.
Stop looking at me, Swan.
Do you have any more gum? All right.
Oh, Miss Vaughn is so hot.
That was another one.
She also played Sonya Blade, and she was smoking hot as Sonya Blade, too.
That was another one that, that had me going when I was a little boy. It got me thinking. I was like, what's going on here? Who's that?
Hello, Miss Lady. Yeah, I get it.
All right. Well, Ty, we're about an hour in here.
Oh, look at that.
But we still got to do the big three. All right. We've exhausted the sports topics. We've exhausted the banter. If we don't get down to business here, folks, we'll be in here forever. But I feel like I don't think there's an off-air show this week because Velger's not here today. So I think we can go as long as we want in the big three.
Yeah, suck it.
But let's not keep the fans waiting much longer.
Suck it, Gil.
Gil's never going to get the sale. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with the big three.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're back. Ty, it's time for the big three. Ty has been hungry throughout the show because he was talking about getting a snack before we started recording. Didn't do it. And then we had to start recording. So now Ty's hungry. And guess what? You're gonna get me even more hungry, buddy, because we're doing the big three after school snacks.
I am so hungry, Matthew.
I love doing food related big threes. We try to mix those in as much as possible. Hopefully we never run out of ideas. What's my middle name?
Yeah.
Steven.
Oh, I want to say James. I don't know why.
I don't know why.
I do James. It works. My dad, flows real well.
It's my dad's name, Steve. BU legend. He literally painted on the wall at a Gannis Arena.
I know.
Look it up. Steve Dolliff. All-American.
If I went to T. Anthony's.
Two-time national champion.
If I went to T. Anthony's, would his photo be on the wall?
You asked me that before. I think you were there.
I was, yeah.
You texted me. I was like, would your dad be on the wall? I think I literally was just like, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it was 50 years ago when they won. But they won two straight national titles.
Was Jack Parker the coach?
Jack Parker was like a young assistant at
the
time.
Wow. There you go.
But it's funny. Like, he knew Jack Parker. Like, my dad would keep going back to all the alumni stuff.
Yeah.
And so Jack Parker would come up to him and be like, hey, Growler. What's up, Growler? His nickname's Growler.
Is Jack Parker still with us?
That's a good question. I don't want to speculate.
Right. I don't know. I don't know if he's still on there.
Thoughts and prayers to Jack,
potentially.
Jack Parker, either way.
Potentially.
I feel like, I don't know. He definitely retired.
Oh, yeah. But, well, Jay Pandolfo now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not. He didn't move on to somewhere. Like, he just hasn't been.
Oh, he's alive. He's 77.
Yeah, he's very much with us. All right. I was going to say, I feel like I would have remembered. Or
Wade
like,
Boggs, may he rest in peace. Wade Boggs is still alive.
I might, like, go to the guy's wake, like, literally. So, yeah, I mean, like, yeah. Speed legend Steve Dolph. Look it up, I swear. HockeyDB.com.
No, I've seen it. I love it.
You know, there were only 12 NHL teams back in the day. But I feel like these days he could have been a Jacob Lauko type.
He could have been a Mark McLaughlin signed out of college free agent.
My dad was like speed skill, but I feel like in the NHL he might not have quite the size to be like a top six guy.
Mm.
He'd be like a grinding bottom six. He'd be like Craig Smith.
Hell yeah. I like that.
Or maybe, no, he's like a playmaker. I was a brilliant playmaker as a hockey player. That was the only thing I could do was I had a wicked wrist shot.
Uh-huh.
A Joe Sakic-esque wrist shot.
Yeah.
And a brilliant playmaking. I could make passes between guys' legs and things like that.
I had
problem is I was fat and out of shape.
I was just
that
fast.
Was my biggest problem.
I have the worst hands in the world. I'm just fast. That's what I got. Like, that's it. I'm fast. Don't ask me to do anything besides just get in the forecheck and cause some problems.
Johnny Beecher over there.
Basically.
Sean Corrali.
Corrali's probably like the best comp for me, I would say. I'm good at face-offs, too. I'll win you a hell of a lot of face-offs.
I take Corrali back at the trade deadline. I don't know how he's been playing. He's still in Columbus now.
It's a four-year deal, though.
God.
Yeah, it's a long
don't
deal.
Don't need that.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get back to business here. Big three after-school snacks. You know what's funny? I Googled like after-school snacks.
Yeah.
Because I always do that for references, ideas, because I don't want to forget things that I might want to say. And it was all these trash, like, foodie blogs. It's like, great affordable snacks that your kids would love. And then it's like a yogurt parfait with blueberries and strawberries. It's like,
the cost,
lady, nobody's got
$1,000.
Yeah. Food, snacks on a budget. And it's like $600 a week.
I'm
like,
literally,
lady,
I'm,
nobody's got time for that.
I'm literally picking just snacks that I would eat when I would get home from school when I was growing up. That's what I'm going to pick here. So there may be things you're going to go, what the hell is that? I'm going to go, I did it and I loved it. So deal with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's basically the same with me.
Cool.
But I'll let you lead us off.
All right, leading us off here. So I used to, when I was a kid, I would ask my mother when she'd go food shopping, be like, yo, can you just get me just like a little block of Cabot Pepper Jack cheese? And I would cut that into some slices, and I would eat that with Triscuits. Just a little pepper jack cheese on a Triscuit, and it was like the most delicious combo that I could ever have. I used to love that. So I love cheese of any sort, but that Cabot pepper jack cheese, you cut that up, put that on a little plate with some crackers, delightful.
Any amount of cheese before a date is too much cheese. I ate a block of cheese.
So like Doc bought these things. They're like these little cheese sticks, and like they're meant to be like snacks you have like with your lunch or whatever.
Yeah,
I can't
do
that. I need crackers with it. I need a cracker or a chip with the cheese. I can't just eat
straight cheese.
Are you
the guy that takes a stick of cheese and just bites into it?
I can't do that. Because
you're supposed to peel off little pieces and eat them one by one.
No, these are
like
different
that.
Than that. These aren't like cheese sticks. They're like...
Oh, like little cubes?
They're like flat. It's like a graham cracker, but of cheese.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I got those before.
Yeah.
They're meant to just be laying them out on a cracker though, right?
I don't know.
I think they are.
She just brings them to work as like a part of her lunch.
She just eats the cheese?
I think, because I don't see her packing any crackers.
Interesting.
Weird.
I'm not a big eating
psychopath.
Cheese by itself guy.
Yeah, same.
I'll eat a cheese stick, I suppose. And like, I've been known to take a slice of American and shove it down my gullet once, you know. by itself.
You're gross. I like you, but you're gross.
I won't say any. I won't make any cheese and cracker picks on my board. That's off the board now. But okay. I would do either Ritz crackers or Wheat Thins if I were to do cheese and crackers.
Wheat Thins were in the running as well for this combo.
But a dollar family party, if we were to have a party or a get together at Sunday, just watching the games. Go to is the cheese and crackers, and then sometimes we get shrimp. I'll eat 50 pieces of shrimp if I'm not careful.
Same.
In like 30 seconds. Like I will just not stop. It'll be disgusting.
I agree.
That's not on my board though. That's not an after school snack really. My first pick, I'll go with Bagel Bites. That was my go to for a couple years when I was just a schoolboy. You know, very easy. You come home, you pop them in the microwave. Sometimes I put them in the toaster oven, but I was fine with the soft version. You know,
I needed the toaster version. Yeah,
you put them in the toaster.
I had to, yeah.
But did you have specifically Bagel Bites? Did you used to eat those?
Yes. It's kind of similar to what my next pick is going to be. So I don't want to go too.
Okay, I always loved to. It was an odd thing, but I guess. But I would try to cook it the perfect amount. I would be upset if I pulled it on, the cheese isn't fully cooked.
Mm.
Put it back in, but then sometimes you pull it out and it's a little overcooked. Cheese is a little dry.
Yeah,
that's no good.
Speaking of like pizzas that were impossible to cook, remember those like Mama Celeste pizzas? First of all, they were garbage.
May or may not be on my list here.
You unbelievable piece of shit.
No, I was into it for a little bit, but then
impossible
literally,
to cook. Either completely frozen in the middle or literally blackened.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing with Hot Pockets, right? The Jim Gaffigan bit.
Yeah.
Where it's like molten hot on the outside and frozen on the inside. Makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I literally got food poisoning from one of those. So I haven't eaten it since. I was like 15.
I get that.
That was a terrible day.
That's a good pick. That's a good first pick. That's like a classic. Like, that is a classic after school kids snack.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good pick. Along those lines, my second pick. Those Totino's pizza rolls? Is it Totino's or Tostino's? Whatever it is.
Totino's, I think. I think you're right.
Pizza rolls. Those things. You just put a bunch on a tray, throw it in your toaster oven, let them cook. You burn your mouth. But that was like,
Less chance of getting frozen ones, though, with the mini pizza rolls.
Yes, exactly. And I loved those because, when you're like 13 years old, you don't want to be running the oven. A little too, there's too many unknowns with that. Yeah. At least for me when I was like 12 or 13.
I feel like that's a big after school snack thing. Toaster oven, microwave, something that where you utilize one of those things.
Yes, exactly. So that was a big one for me was just those pizza rolls. Cause you could, again, you would just throw like 10 or 12 in, throw in the toaster oven, cook them like 20 minutes. They come out, they burn your mouth, but you eat them and you feel great. Now I feel like if I did that, I'd feel like absolute garbage if I ate those.
I'm going to have to throw the challenge flag on Feel Great.
Well, back then you would. Now you definitely wouldn't.
While you're eating it, I suppose.
Dude, we used to be able to do like everything. Like, you can get home from school, eat a bunch of garbage, take a nap. Your friend comes by, knocks on the door, like, hey, we're going to go play football. And you're like, all right. And you would wake up after eating a bunch of garbage food and go play football and have a great time.
I think that's
now,
literally.
You literally can't do that.
That's literally what happened to me with the Celeste pizza. I'm pretty sure I ate it right before I went and played like a street hockey game with my friends, and I had to leave the game early because I was feeling sick.
Oh, man.
And then I got home, and I spent the rest of the day in the bathroom.
Food poisoning is the worst. It's the absolute worst. Like there's nothing.
There was one time at Northeastern, I got dining hall scrambled eggs. Ugh. And it wasn't the first. It was like the 300th time I'd had scrambled eggs out of nowhere. I'm done for 24 hours from those things.
Really?
So they had to be. I might have had salmonella and just not gone to the hospital somehow.
I can't do breakfast food like eggs. I just don't do it.
You just don't do any breakfast food. You like cereal?
I love cereal.
That's a breakfast food.
It is, but it's not like a prepared breakfast food.
You don't do like an omelet, sausages, and things like that. I love a good trip to a breakfast diner. Oh.
If we go to a breakfast place.
You get the little mini box of Rice Krispies or Lucky Charms?
No, I do. Like, if it's a place like IHOP, I'll get like a club sandwich while everyone else is getting like breakfast. Like, that's just what I'll do.
Weirdo.
Probably. I mean, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?
I mean, I say that as I was the guy who would go to Denny's at 2 a.m. and get French toast.
So I mean, listen, like
we're both disgusting humans in our own special ways.
There's a dietary reason for this. There's an intestinal reason for some of this as well. We used when I would play street hockey up in Drake it after games, because sometimes we'd have a game at 8 in the morning, and we would have to, you know, after we go, oh, let's go get some breakfast after. We go to this place in Wilmington called Deli King. I don't know if you've ever been or not, because I know you are slightly around that area.
I've been to a lot of delis, haven't been to the Wilmington one.
So Deli King, and they would have these big breakfasts, and it'd be like 9 in the morning, and I'd be like, I'm just going to get a banana and a yogurt, because if I eat any of this stuff, I'm going to have to run to the bathroom as soon as I can.
That makes sense. But isn't that why those places are so great, though? It's for anybody. It's for everybody.
We had so my friend Fro, he was on
person. His name's Fro.
Yeah, that's his name. He was on our team, and I forget what it was. I don't know if it was if he scored a goal or we won the game. I can't remember what it was, but it was like the 8 in the morning game, and he was like, "Hey, if we win this game, boys, I'll go to Deli King and order the liver and onions for breakfast." And we were all like, "What?" And then we won it, and he did it.
Wow!
And I'll never forget the look on the guy's face when he was like, "I'll order the liver and onions," and the guy looked at him and was like, "What?" Like, and he's just, and I remember eating it, being like, "This is not good."
He's pointing up at the menu like, "You realize that's like a joke, right?" we don't even have that. I remember because of Doug, that was considered like the grossest food known to man.
Yeah, it did look pretty disgusting when it came out.
I mean, liver? There's no way a liver looks appetizing.
There's no way.
Our livers are in pretty good shape, I think. Well, I don't know about you with the sugar, but neither of us drink that much alcohol. You don't drink any. I don't drink that much alcohol, so I feel like our livers are going to be in pretty good shape compared to
I try not to eat. I try not to drink my sugar anymore, if that makes sense. I try not, like, because that kind of grosses me out when I think about it. When I think about how, like, one can of Coke has, like, 48 grams of sugar.
Yeah, and you're then, just like, easily.
I visualize 48 grams of sugar. I'm like, ugh. Yeah, are you putting that in me?
You're just so easily pouring sugar into you.
Yeah. So, it's like, crazy. I try not to drink my sugar anymore. One thing I've gotten into is, it sucks that it took my heart trying to kill me to get into this, but, really into fruit now. I just love having fruit as a snack now. Like,
there you
I
go.
For breakfast this morning, I had a yogurt and I had an orange. And I'm sitting in my living room by myself eating an orange going, man, I forgot how good oranges are. Just saying this out loud. To nobody. Just losing my mind.
That's an underrated snack right there. Just a straight up orange.
I would agree. I would 100% agree with that.
I get that people might say, well, I got to peel it. You know, like they don't want to go just through the effort.
Take a knife and just slice it. Slice it into fourths and then just peel it.
It is pretty satifying to peel apart an orange and then bite into it.
Something about it is like really satisfying.
It is a satisfying snack.
I would take cutting and peeling orange slices over peeling a banana. That's my... Yeah. It seems easier, I know, with a banana, but I do not like...
It is easy. It's pretty
easy with a
banana.
I do not like pulling the bananas off, like, the... What do you call it? The branch? What do you call it?
The stem?
The stem? Let's call it the stem. Because then you run the risk of tearing another banana, and you're like, now I have to eat two bananas, or they're going to go bad.
Pulling out the little dingleberry at the bottom of a banana is never fun.
Yeah, I don't care for that either.
I famously have a fruit allergy now, but I wonder if oranges are okay. I just know apples and bananas.
Let's try it. Let's bring an orange. Bring in the oranges. He's just super red. He's like, I feel pretty good eating this.
I turn around. I look like a... I don't even know.
Do you ever watch Papa's Burgers?
Yeah.
There's a character, Teddy. He's like allergic to something. And he's trying to order a burger. He's like, making burger. And they're like, what? He's like, making burger. And they're like, what are you saying, Teddy? He's like, He's like moving. They're like, oh, burger. That's what you'd be eating, an orange.
Yeah. I hopefully not. I want to try it, though. It's a sad day that I can't eat fruit anymore. I used to love it. Mm. Some of it on my list here. All right. Let's move on to my second pick now. Still just my second pick, right?
Wow. All right. I think so, yeah.
I'm going to go peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I know you might quibble with that being a snack.
No.
But... You know, I don't always do the full sandwich. I do that. Do you ever do this? You put a little peanut butter and jelly on one slice, fold that in half, scarf that down.
Yeah.
See, that's a nice little snack. I do that.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I had a friend who had a... he would call them pea dogs. He'd put peanut butter in a hot dog bun, and he would eat that.
I could see. It's bread. Bread is bread.
Yeah. Like, well, a hot dog bun tastes distinctly different, I think, from a piece of, like, wheat bread or something. But I guess it's probably about the same as, a Wonder Bread.
Do you do chunky or do you do smooth?
Oh, I pretty much always do creamy, smooth, whatever. Not non-crunchy. I've never been a fan of chunky. I've never been a fan of crunchy and smooth together. Mm-hmm. Like, one or the other. You know,
you mean
I've never
peanuts?
Like, I'll just eat peanuts straight up, but okay. I won't really eat, like, a peanut chocolate bar, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm a chunky guy. Always have been. Love it. You know what's funny about peanut butter and jelly is that, I don't know if your parents like this, I always wanted that jar as a kid that was, like, half peanut butter, half chocolate. I mean, half peanut butter, half jelly. You know what I'm talking about? It's called, like, Goober. It's called, like, Goobers.
No.
But it was a jar, and it was, like, half peanut butter and half jelly. And I always wanted it. My parents were like, no, you don't want that. I'm like, I do. And they're like, no, you don't. You won't like it. And then I realized I definitely wouldn't have liked it because I would have been like, it's weird.
It would have looked weird.
It's two in one.
Yeah, like, there's got to be some kind of like scientific reason or like they tested a product and it didn't go over well. Like you put peanut butter and jelly together, you figured there would be a product.
You've definitely.
Where it's very easily, you pour it all out at the same time.
I'm going to pull this up.
But, isn't that true? Like, the fact that that doesn't exist has to tell you that there's something where they put a bunch of Ty Andersons in a room. The jar seems familiar.
Goober Grape, it was called. Smucker's Goober Grape. Peanut butter and grape jelly stripes. Yeah. I wanted this so bad as a kid, my parents would never let me get it.
You're going to be a goober to want that.
Hey. You'd be nice.
I feel like they made a squeeze, like the squeeze bottle. I feel like they made one like that with both.
Perhaps. I know they've made squeezes of both peanut butter and jelly.
There has to be something.
I haven't seen it together.
I'm telling you, they did some kind of marketing test and like everyone was just completely grossed out by it.
Grape jelly, so strawberry jelly. I'm trying to figure out what kind of sandwich you eat here.
Oh, grape guy. I'll have strawberry if that's all you have, you know.
But strawberry's better on toast. It's not as good on a sandwich, I think.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah. I don't know. We got this butter and for the house, and it's cinnamon brown sugar butter, and I put that on toast now, and I'm like, blows my mind.
Oh my God, that's what sounds like a Texas Roadhouse.
Oh, butter. Texas Roadhouse bread looks like Kim Kardashian's ass in that one magazine shoot she did.
Is that good?
I don't know. It all depends how you feel about it. Isn't it kind of crazy though that if you have a peanut allergy, you cannot go to Texas Roadhouse or you will die? Like, isn't that kind of bizarre?
Wow.
Like one restaurant, can't go.
You can't step in there. Yeah, you take a you just breathe.
No, you walk in the door, you need to call an ambulance immediately. Like, sir, you need to go right now.
No, it's definitely tough because the second you walk in, they just throw a buck. They take a pail full of peanuts and just chuck them at you.
Yeah. Do you have any friends in your life that have nut allergies, like severe ones?
No, not severe ones, I don't think.
I have a cousin who has one, and I think this is okay for me to say this because I think he said it publicly. Evan Marinofsky has a nut allergy.
Ah, what a nerd.
He also has a cat allergy. He came to my apartment. He's like, oh, you have a cat? I forgot. I can't stay long. And I was like, you didn't know about Creep? I'm like, come on.
I tweet about him three times a day.
Creep, by the way, went to the vet yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Is he okay?
Yeah.
Was President Lincoln okay?
He's as good as a 19-year-old cat can be.
Oh, I didn't know he was that old.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
wow,
yeah.
Creep you start calling him Fossil now.
Dude, he's super old.
Wow.
The vets love him.
He looks good for 19.
That's what I'm saying, right?
19, I figure you got like one eye and like you got empty patches where there's no fur.
No, he was a good boy. He had a bad time at first. He was like panting, but he settled down. They told me we got to feed him more. We were giving him two cans a day and dry food, but they're like, nah, you can up it to three cans. I was like, oh, this little fat boy is going to be in heaven. He's going to be in hog heaven, baby. But they loved him. They were like, you know, they're like, he looks good for a 19-year-old cat. I'm like, that's what I'm saying. He's got that silver fox, but he's orange, so he's orange fox.
He's a very handsome.
He's very best looking person, lives in that house.
Very handsome 19-year-old cat.
Person.
Quick cat story. I got a new bed. Last weekend, it finally got delivered yesterday morning, and Stella, my cat, got very upset.
Really?
When I got out of bed, and the first thing I did, because like they were coming early in the morning first thing I did was get out of my old bed and like take the mattress and box spring out into the living room to make it easier for the delivery guys to take it out. And just the second I go into the other room with the mattress, I hear. Like a very, very long agonizing cry, because I'm pretty sure my old bed, Stella, like cut a hole in the bottom of the box spring and she would just go up there and hang out.
Mm.
And so she had nowhere to go for a while. And the funniest part, though, is that the Jordan's furniture guys came in with the mattress. They laid the bed out. They put it down, you know, exactly where it's supposed to be. New bed's there. Stella is still just in my closet, like hiding behind like my little tool bag in between that and like a cardboard box.
Yeah.
Just like huddling in this little corner of the room, stayed there for another like 2 hours after the bed was delivered. So traumatizing experience getting the new bed.
So
it's probably busted a couple of holes in the new one already.
So this is Creep's first time living in a place that has two floors. We have an upstairs and a downstairs. And he does not like upstairs, which upstairs is where our bed is. It's where our bedroom is. And I feel bad because like, he used to sleep in bed with us, and now he just stays on the couch. He's like, nah, I'm good. I'm not going up the stairs. He does not like going up the stairs. So,
yeah.
I mean, that might be because he's old. But
right. No, yeah. It's like old people. You get a one-floor house when you get older.
He's like, stairs is a young man's this is game.
You need to get one of those like machines that like carries you up the stairs. Get a mini cat one.
Get a little basket for him.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
It would be
a little pulley system.
I'd like that. But yeah.
If you can make it so there's a lever that like he could push the lever himself and get carried up. That would be... I feel like this is a new project we need to work on.
Cat apartments?
Just a transportation method for... to get Creep up the stairs.
Yeah, I was wondering where my phone is going
off. Now he's just the guy in Half-Baked. Never gets off the couch.
Basically.
All right, make your third pick, Ty.
All right, third pick. This one's kind of weird. It's a little off the beaten path, but again, going back to this age, this era, you know, I was always, you know, I was young. I was obviously younger, and I didn't have full access to, like, how to use the oven, how to actually cook anything. So they used to make these things. I think they still might make them, honestly. The Chunky Soup used to make these ones that you would just put it in the microwave and heat it up for like 2.5 minutes. And it would like jump. Like it'd be like you'd think it was going to explode. But it was like chili just in like a thing without involving the stovetop. And I used to have that all the time because like I'd come home. I'd have to walk home a lot of time from school because I'd have practice or I'd have detention, depending on what year of my life it was. So I have to ride my bike home or walk home, and it'd be cold out. You know, it's middle of December. It's 13 degrees out. The sun goes down at 4 p.m. And I'd be like, all right, I'm super hungry, and I want something hot. So they had these microwavable chilies, these chunky chilies things, and you put them in for 2 minutes, boom, good to go. I must have had 50 of those when I was a kid. Like, just like, I was freezing, and that was the best way to warm up was eating that chunky soup. And I think back then it was like Jerome Bettis was like the spokesman. And I was like, I like football. I like him. I'm going to get these. It's kind of one of those things.
Yeah. Shout out to the bus.
Right.
He was great. I don't think I ever had that, but I am a big chili guy. That's like my next, I randomly have food projects.
Yeah.
Like I have a slow cooker now that I got from my grandma, God rest her soul. But I have her old slow cooker, never used it. But I feel like that I'm gonna finally bust that out and make some chili. You've inspired me.
Do you have is it a crock pot? Is it the same kind of thing?
Crock pot, yeah, basically.
So if you want to make something real good using crock pot, make a buffalo chicken pasta.
Oh, I've had that.
It's gonna like blow your mind.
I've had slow cooker buffalo chicken stuff.
It's unreal. It's unreal.
Maybe it was buffalo pulled pork or something like that.
That's almost too wild for me.
That's like it was like, you know, like a tip like a barbecue pulled pork except buffalo instead of barbecue. It was something like that.
I don't know if
it was good though. I mean, slow cooker is arguably the most underrated like cooking method item, whatever.
And you always have so much. Because leftovers for days.
Because we're so impatient and have no attention spans, like it takes discipline to want to cook something over a period of 8 hours, right?
Yeah, you got it. Like that's like Ryan Johnson from 98.5 here, you know,
he's a big slow cooker guy.
And I'm like, dude, how can you do that?
Smoker guy, that's what I'm saying.
Like 16 hours cooking something? I don't know if I could ever do it. But yeah, Microwave
chili. I'd be so afraid of like
cooking after school snack.
Yeah, no, I'd be so afraid of just overcooking by like 5 minutes and it ruins the whole thing.
Right.
After like all that time, you know.
Microwave chili ready in 2.5 minutes in my old microwave.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Unless it explodes.
No waiting there.
I feel like there's an explosion potential for that.
It definitely did on a few occasions. And
whether you or the microwave.
And my parents would be like, clean out the microwave. And I'm like, no, it's fine. It's good. I didn't do that. And they're like, yes, you did. It was only you home. I'm like, must have been someone else. It wasn't me.
We bought that for you.
Nope.
I watched you do it. No,
nope.
that was not me.
I was at school. Like, no, you weren't. Yeah, no, I was.
That's like, that might be the number one reason I want to have kids now. I just want to see what it's like when they lie. And you just see how
yeah.
They're just so clearly full of crap.
I was a terrible liar. I smile.
Just,
I just can't. I have no poker face.
It's just, no. No, you got ground beef on your face. No, it wasn't me.
Yeah. All the redness from like the sauce. Yeah, my worst story ever is that when I said F you to a girl, I was like 8 years old, and she's like, I'm telling, and I was like, no, you're not. I'm faster than you, which is a weird thing to say in response. But I raced her to my parents and said, no, I didn't, before they even knew I did anything wrong, which is like, hey, good job, idiot. So yeah not a good liar.
All right. I haven't made my third pick yet. Wow. We're going a little long here this week, folks, but I hope you're enjoying it. I'm going to make my third pick now. Done vamping. I don't want to be too similar to my second pick. I'll skip that one. Put that in the honorable mentions. Yeah, we already mentioned that one. All right. I'll go popcorn with my third pick.
Oh, that's a great pick.
Just make a bag of popcorn.
Damn it. I'm so mad I didn't think of this.
So easy. So simple. You pop on a movie or your Family Feud or something that's on TV in the afternoon, and you just make a nice bag of popcorn. It's just so easy.
You're describing my life right now, except instead of a Family Feud, it would be King of the Hill or The Simpsons.
Yeah, I'm just thinking something that's like on at like 3 p.m. when you get home from school.
Yeah, there used to be when we were kids, there was like a sick rotation that was like, it was like King of the Hill, The Simpsons, King of Queens, Seinfeld. I was like, this is great. I got 4 hours of programming covered right then and there. Boom.
Just 4 back-to-backs like that?
I think you had to switch channels at one point. But yeah, it was on the same 2 channels. It wasn't like I was going to 4 different channels.
It's like you're at Coachella running between the state, 2 stages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Boston like, calling.
We have Olivia Rodrigo at 4 p.m., and then we have Wu-Tang at 6. So
right.
Plan accordingly. That is a great call. The company, the popcorn that we would always have, I'm curious if you had the same one, was Act 2 Butter Lovers. That was always the microwave popcorn that we had, and that was delightful.
I think we just went for the classic Orville Redenbacher.
Mm.
Not sure. I couldn't tell you the exact popcorn brand we had. I remember there was, for a hot minute when I was a young boy, there was some company made like rainbow colored popcorn. You get like purple popcorn.
Oh,
like
I wouldn't.
Green
I wouldn't do
popcorn.
That.
Like, and I was for whatever reason, I was interested in that, and so they got that to appease me.
It was
popcorn. It was just a different color.
Yeah, I can't. I something sensory about that. I can't do. I can't do red velvet cake. I think
I get what you mean though.
Like, I can't do. Everyone's like, tastes like chocolate. I'm like, nah, it's red. It's not chocolate.
That's
red.
I can't do like a pastry that looks like something else. You know,
yeah.
Like if someone puts a mini like cupcake that looks like a cheeseburger in front of me, I feel like I couldn't.
Yeah,
my
that
brain
happened,
would be all too effed up.
That happened. Doc got a grab gift that was like, it was like gummy, looks like Oscar Mayer hot dogs. I was like, I'm not touching that.
Right,
that seems like a hot dog. I'm not.
Yeah,
that.
Like that's,
like, it's not a hot dog. I'm like, it looks like one. I'm not touching that.
Yeah, like that's weird.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. All right. Well, that exhausts my. I'm done talking about popcorn. That concludes the big three, and it concludes this week's podcast, Ty. A little longer than usual, but, you know, we didn't have the time constraints this week. It's after 6 o'clock, no off-air show.
Yeah.
So I think we took advantage of it.
I don't care. If we have fun, we'll do this for 4 hours.
I had a lot of fun on this episode.
Me too.
I fully admit that. That's what we try to do every week. This is the Sports Hub Underground. I am Matt Dolph. He is Ty Anderson. Most of you probably know that by now, but you might stumble upon this if you just come across our articles at 95thesportshub.com. So if you're listening for the first time, thank you. And if you made it this far, thanks. I love you. Please give us a subscription, whatever you want to call it. We're on Apple. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on Spotify. I know Spotify is big in the podcast world. We might have to look into Amazon. I don't know. I wonder if we can get on Amazon Music. I know they're growing in the podcast area, I believe.
They are?
We'll look into that. I don't know. I don't know if we have any capability to do that whatsoever. But you can get us wherever you get your podcast. I always say every week, you know, if you're one of these people that uses like Stitcher and you need to get like just the link to the RSS feed or something, we can provide you with that. So we want you to be able to listen to us no matter whatever medium you use. So, you know, hit us up on Twitter.
Even Long Island medium.
Exactly. Yeah, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram, 98.5 Underground. Follow me and Ty on Twitter. I'm just Matt Dolloff, D-O-L-L-O-F-F. Ty's Twitter handle is underscore Ty Anderson. He's an underscore guy.
That's me, baby.
Plenty of Bruins coverage every single week.
Underscore from the underground, as he's known.
Of course, yeah. That's what we always call you around these parts, yeah. But yeah, like we always talk hockey. We're two big hockey guys, but we cover all the teams. I got plenty of Patriots thoughts on the website. You know, if you enjoy just like reading articles, you know, you're a Boston sports fan. I think you should give us a shot. You know, we'll see how it goes. But if you're listening to me ramble right now at the end of the podcast, I assume that you enjoyed listening to this pod. So we come out every Thursday at 95thesportshub.com wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, we will talk to you again soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.